Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. Yeah, we're here. We are here. It's a busy week. We're 2.5 weeks out from build, something like that.
Yeah, we're all working our collective tushies off, I'm sure.
Getting some stuff done. You started the show like you thought you were on chat roulette, which was really, I had tears in my eyes. I had to go dry my eyes to start the show. But yeah, good job on that.
One of these days we should just have outtakes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure Golnaz has started recording all of our shows before we knew. And so one day there will be this. It'll be our last day. We'll know because we'll be served with something right after.
It's our blackmail list.
Yeah, yeah. So let's start here. So the first thing is, I owe you a huge thank you. You advised me. I need to get a new router for my house.
Getting rid of that Rosewell thing.
Yes, it was a Rosewell. Thank you. But Comcast, I finally got tired of them harassing me about how old my modem was. And so I finally did the upgrade. Mm-hmm. And I did speed tests the entire time, did the replacement of the cable modem, the replacement of the router, and then testing for Wi-Fi. And so I was just like, I didn't even want to research anything. I was just like, go, what do I get? Mm. And so you told me to get the ASUS RT-AC68U. I looked, had good ratings, so I just got it. Didn't even ask any questions or anything, and it is the finest router I've ever used. So my speeds, even wired speeds, went way up. Yeah. And when you do anything, of course, the CPU is like nothing because there's all this offboarding on the router itself.
Yeah, this router has so much horsepower. It's like a quad-core system with very, very good Broadcom chips where, yeah, everything is offloaded. It has oodles of memory to spare, so you know, for later firmware upgrades, there should be no problems with it. It tells you when you need a firmware upgrade. Like ASUS is really good about that. You go to the management page every once in a while, and you'll see this little blinking exclamation mark saying, "Hey, you know, go and update your firmware right now." Yeah. And they're very, very proactive. Like that router has the ability to do an OpenVPN. Point-to-point tunneling protocol VPN server.
Yeah.
So you can connect to your router from anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're really good because, you know, OpenVPN with their OpenSSL implementation has gotten some bad raps lately, and they are constantly updating it with all the fixes.
Yeah.
So this is great. I use either or, the OpenVPN or point-to-point tunneling protocol. Point-to-point tunneling protocol, obviously a little bit less secure, but OpenVPN is actually quite good, and ASUS's implementation works pretty well.
Yeah.
I haven't had to reboot the modem for it. That's the one thing with this modem, I've never had to
reboot
it. Yeah,
I was rebooting the old Rosewell a few times a week. It was getting kind of a pain. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. But the speed after I replaced my cable modem, I was getting maybe, I don't know, 7 times faster than I was on my old cable modem. And then the wired speed, I mean, now I'm getting like 25 times faster than before.
And how many like wired and wireless devices do you have in your house?
I use every port and I could use more. I mean, I need to use some kind of switch or something after the router, but I don't. I just plug them up by hand whenever I need to use a couple extra Xboxes. Mm-hmm. And then I have maybe 10 wireless devices in the house. Not a ton, maybe more than that, closer to 12 or 15. Mm-hmm. But everything's just like Netflix on my Xbox. I used to have to wait for it to buffer up The Walking Dead or something. Now it's just like I see $16.99 and it's playing.
Right.
So much faster.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed with this particular router, and I think I've got something like 30 or 35 wired and wireless devices around my house. Mm-hmm. I have a separate managed switch hooked up into the router, but it is able to handle the devices without a problem. And
so
that's a great thing.
We were talking about some of the older devices that don't have 802.11n or AC or anything. What you want to tell us your trick for that?
You can get USB adapters. Recently, I have these couple old Core 2 Duo HP laptops that have N, but only 2.4 gigahertz.
Yeah.
And tangential story about those things. I tried upgrading the PCIe wireless card inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Things cannot be upgraded.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm glad you didn't go with that first word that was spilling out of your mouth.
Physically, they can be upgraded.
Like, oh, you
can
physically.
Physically, okay. you can actually remove the chip and put in a new one. However, a lot of OEMs BIOS lock.
Yeah.
The hardware, so you can't actually replace it, even with a compatible, just higher functioning card.
Yeah.
You can't actually replace it. Man, that really bugs me.
And normally, when I'm thinking about putting something on a laptop or a portable device, I'm thinking, oh man, it's going to have a bunch of antennas and things.
Yeah, but I actually did a bunch of research, and this is a really svelte one that I found on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You can tell I bought this. This is actually my account. It is super, super tiny. It's a dual band 802.11 micro USB adapter, not actual micro USB, but you know,
it's
a micro
small.
Size.
It's, yeah.
It's a very small sized USB 802.11 adapter. Super cheap, $30. I mean, the Edimax has some different versions of it. You can tell, you know, this is their 1200 version, much larger mm-hmm. antenna. This is a, you know, a smaller one, a little bigger than a quarter.
Yeah.
But this is absolutely their tiniest one. And they say that it's designed for a Mac, works perfectly with Windows.
Yeah.
There are Windows drivers for it, no problem. Windows 7, XP, Vista, 8, everything works beautifully with it. My laptop is the kind that had wireless and... And you know, wireless N has a max speed of about 300 meg per second.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the antenna configuration, and if it's 2.4 gigahertz, and if you have Bluetooth, you get all these mitigating factors, you actually get a much, much lower throughput. This particular HP laptop, you can only get a max of 72 meg per second.
Yeah.
Megabits per second. Could not go any faster than that. And I'm dealing with, you know, multi-meg pictures, you know, taken from a DSLR, and we do that wirelessly. My wife does a bunch of collages and editing with this. So it takes, you know, a long time from the server mm-hmm. to go and scan through the pictures. And
you like your chat roulette to be fast, I understand.
Anyways, these little adapters instantly went up to 450 on my Asus router.
Yeah.
So it's maxing out, and this is everywhere in my house, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
My wife is so much happier, low profile.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. The wife acceptance factor or the partner acceptance factor
yeah.
is really, really high with this. Very, very reliable, no dropouts. And yeah, it just works great as an upgrade.
Yeah.
Now we talked a little bit about this and you know we're talking about 5 gigahertz, 2.4 gigahertz. The Asus router is a dual band. You'll always really want to primarily connect to 5 gigahertz if you can. The way that you can tell if you're using 5 or 2.4 gigahertz easily is run this little command in the CMD window, netshwlan show interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit cryptic. So you can tell right here that I'm connected to an 802.11n network. Is it 2.4? Is it 5? I don't know. Ooh. Anyways, you can tell by the channel, 36. The 2.4 gigahertz channels, you go 1, 6, and 11.
Yeah.
And if you're greater than 11, you're in the 5 gigahertz band.
Okay.
So you can tell that I'm connected to 802.11n, but in the 5 gigahertz, which is what you want to be connected to.
Yeah.
That's what should be preferred wherever you can. The Asus you can set up so that it uses the exact same SSID on 2.4 or 5. I tend to separate it out. I actually have a different name for my 2.4 and a different name for my 5, so I know exactly what I'm connected with.
Mm-hmm.
I usually suggest that for people. And yeah, like I say, you know, you get this adapter. It's a great upgrade for a laptop that would otherwise be normally powerful enough.
Yeah.
And this will remarkably increase your speeds. It is actually truly amazing.
Nice. Awesome. Okay. All right. First question, which isn't really a question as much as a statement. It's from Ant, and he says, where are you guys? We missed a defrag show. Like I said, been working on build. We had some other scrums going on here in DX and Windows. You had your own things going on, so I canceled a couple times. You canceled a couple times. Next week, I'm on vacation, so we won't shoot next week, but we are going to do one more show before we go to build. So we'll do that week, and then we'll be at build. Which build, you don't want to miss anything from build. So we'll be live between all the sessions at build. We're live all 3 days. We're going to have a bunch of really interesting things. I have the deck up in front of me, and I can't talk about any of it because there's so many interesting things that we're going to have that it's pretty much going to fill our schedule. So you'll want to watch that. And I'm going to have Mary Jo do a couple interviews, too, which should be
Larry the Tease. Larry the Tease.
That's how we do. And then, let's see, and then we'll be back. We go from build to Ignite. We're live 5 days at Ignite. Watch that.
Can you describe Ignite a little bit there?
It's an amalgamation.
I think people are familiar with build, but I don't know if they're.
Yeah, so Ignite is something new that we're doing where we said, hey, we do like 10 conferences that are kind of similar and they're focused on IT pros. And so we're combining all of those into one big kind of super conference in Chicago. And it'll be really interesting to watch that. We'll be live 5 days there. And then we fly off to Paris for another conference. And so we're on the road for like a month. It'll be great. All right.
No rest for the wicked.
Yeah. So next question from Mitchie says, I'm one of those rare users who likes to use the taskbar in auto-hide mode in Windows 8.1. Unfortunately, when using auto-hide mode, taskbar behaves inconsistently, sometimes showing for no reason, sometimes staying visible. Even when clicking or moving a window in desktop, can you suggest a way to solve this problem?
I've had the identical problem. I used to use auto-hide all
the
time.
You're a hider?
I absolutely used to be a hider. It's all about getting, you know, maximum amount of screen real estate.
Sure.
And then eventually I found out that I actually like having icons on the taskbar, and like on my desktop machine, I would double tall them.
Yeah.
Right? So then I just left it as a double tall, and this was my task switcher all the time. Like before Windows 10, which actually has multiple desktops, which is actually really cool. This machine I have to keep on as a test for 8.1, so I don't actually have 10 on here. I just use the taskbar nowadays as my task switcher as opposed to Alt Tab or anything. But yeah, I had the exact same problem. And usually what I would have to do is click on essentially every single window in order to give it focus and then have it be dismissed. Mm-hmm. And that would actually make it auto hide again. It's usually just some weird misbehaving window that's trying to steal focus, is trying to say, hey, I want attention, go click on me. And it just hasn't got that notification yet. And once it's actually drained its cues, it would actually hide properly, or it would allow the taskbar to hide properly.
And I suspect since you saw that, you probably mentioned it to someone.
It is unfortunately the kind of thing where it's like, yes, we understand it's a problem, but it's misbehaving third-party software.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you did it on a brand spanking new clean install with no applications installed, everything would just work fine. But without actually looking at what do you have on your machine, what do you have installed, what are your shell extensions.
The problem.
Right. Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, it could be anything that is loaded and running. It'll be, you know, it won't be a service or anything like that, but it could be a shell extension.
Yeah.
It could be something running in your notification area. It could be an extension to like the speakers. But really it's going to be some component that is currently running on your desktop. You want to start eliminating those. So if you can actually just, you know, reduce the list of running applications to see what you can repro it to, then that would be great. But without debugging it, I can't actually give good troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Other than killing off applications.
Okay. All right. Next from Robert, missing defrag show, we know. Hopefully you guys will make more shows. We're trying. I've been reading about Windows 10 and UEFI, and from what I've read, Windows 10 when released will not install unless the hardware has UEFI. Is this true? If so, will there be a Windows 10 for older hardware that doesn't have UEFI?
Absolutely not true. Windows 10 will totally run on BIOS-based systems. I believe the requirement for UEFI is on new OEM systems that will be produced that are designed for Windows 10. Mm-hmm. So if OEMs want a design for Windows 10 logo, then it will be a UEFI-based machine.
Yeah.
But we'll be upgrading from BIOS-based machines for a long time. BIOS-based machines will be available for a very long time. Windows 10 does not drop support for that at all.
Okay. Cool. Next question from Tom. The Stream 7 has an Intel Atom Z3735G processor, which is listed as a 64-bit processor. Is there a benefit or disadvantage to installing 32-bit operating system versus 64-bit on tablets that have 64-bit processors, or is it, or is the bitness of the installed Win operating system mainly due to the amount of installed RAM on tablets, which is generally 512 meg or 1 gig?
Couple of things. That processor, yes, is 64-bit capable. However, the EFI is locked to 32-bit. So you won't actually get a 64-bit OS on there. Regardless of that, if it had a 64-bit EFI capability to it, the problem that you have is the limited disk space.
Mm-hmm.
So a 64-bit OS, if you were on a 32-gig system, you'd be left with without a compressed OS, which I'll be talking about a little bit later, you'd be left with something like 12 gig free,
mm-hmm.
approximately, you know, 10 to 12 gig free, which is not a lot.
Yeah.
So it's really not the best experience. And on a low RAM system like those tablets, you're not really gaining a lot by installing a 64-bit OS on
mm-hmm.
it. Because you're right, there's limited RAM. It's usually 1 or 2 gig max on them. You just don't get the horsepower performance enhancements that you'd expect out of a 64-bit system on that kind of tablet. So it's just not worth it.
Okay, cool. All right, pick of the week time. Yeah, short show, that's what you get. So pick of the week, the first one is one of yours. It's how Windows 10 achieves its compact footprint, which
right.
is really interesting. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so we got a blog post on this. We started off with the Wimboot style system for 8.1, the spring 2014 update,
mm-hmm.
Is when we started with this Wimboot thing in order to reduce the amount of space for these lower footprint devices that we were just talking about. You'll notice that the... remember that Winbook tablet that I was
yep.
telling you about before, that 16
yeah.
gig device?
Yeah, for like $60.
Right, so
yeah.
that uses Wimboot.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a method of compressing or reducing the overall size of the Windows OS and reducing redundancy, really, is what
yeah.
we're talking about here. And that's what Windows 10 expands on. It's kind of like Wimboot 2.0 or Compact OS.
And that was something we started that a few OSs ago. I mean, I remember Windows 7, it was a smaller footprint.
Oh,
well,
we've been
down.
Always trying to reduce the footprint
yeah.
on the OS for a very, very long time. And we're just getting better and better at it
mm-hmm.
by, you know, pulling stuff off, pulling it down from the cloud as needed.
Yeah.
Windows 10 goes about it in a slightly different manner by doing it more dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, compact the files as needed. We have heuristics that run. It can, it doesn't require any special deployment, which what Wimboot required. You can, after the fact, apply this compression scheme after you've upgraded or after you do a clean install. So it actually is not as impactful to the OEMs in their servicing and their manufacturing process.
Mm-hmm.
So we also reduce, we eliminate having to have separate recovery partitions, which also eat up space. One of the things that we're doing, though, is because it's not a Wimboot and it's not like a read-only file system, when you have a truly catastrophic failure where the recovery via the Compact OS is not enough, we always let you at the very beginning create a recovery media.
Yeah.
So it's basically an off disk full backup. So you can always restore to whatever state that you wanted to later on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're gonna be gaining back significant gigabytes here. So 16 gig devices will be much more accessible.
Very nice, very nice.
With a lot more usable free space too.
Cool. Okay. The second pick of the week we have is from our buddy Andre, who says he has a nice pick of the week on Zoom, our Touch Zoom desktop. So this is a software that will allow you to zoom in. Now, I thought this was awesome, and I haven't installed it on this machine, but I did try it on another one, and it seems just really well done how they did this, because you still have all of your touch interaction that you would typically have, like in a web page where you can zoom in and out, but you can also zoom in and out on desktop items too. So this is kind of like the magnifier, but built in.
Right.
So, and it, if I'm not mistaken, I think it uses the same APIs as a magnifier too. So really interesting and just really well done. You might want to give it a try, especially if you're like me and you have a system that, like, I think this is 3,200 pixels wide, this display. So it's just a really high resolution screen. And sometimes you just need to zoom in on things like in, I want to say like Premiere or something that has a UI that doesn't really conform with some of the scaling that Windows does. So really interesting application. And if you tend to use Magnifier a lot, you'll probably love this.
And it's actually companion software to another piece of software that we talked about on a previous show, the Touch Mouse Pointer.
Which I do have installed on this machine. I use quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, this really kind of takes having a high-resolution tablet like the Surface Pro 3 or the Yoga to the next level, because it's, you know, you're able to get super high resolution, so the more stuff on the screen, but you know, you need to do a quick zoom on a picture that you get through email or whatever, and this just makes it super simple, and it's relatively little overhead.
Yeah. All right, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Keep the questions coming. Thanks a lot.